The following program is a production of KHNS. Its content does not necessarily reflect the views or opinions of the Board of Directors and staff of Lincolnell Broadcasting Incorporated, the licensee.
Talk Around Town is supported in part by Community Waste Solutions, offering comprehensive refuse services for the community of Haines, with curbside pickup to South Hall, composting to recycling, C&D disposal to septic and porta-potty services. Community Waste Solutions at the end of FAA Road in Haines, open 10 a.m. to 3 p.m. Monday through Saturday.
Talk Around Town. I'm Deborah Schnabel, your guide through today's talk about things that matter. Stay tuned for our current news analysis with Tom Morfitt, and our talking topic is the Muniplex. Our guests are Facilities Master Plan Steering Committee members Rob Goldberg and Lanise Henderson. We'll check in with Talk Chinook Watershed Council, and hey, who are you? Introduces us to another community member. This is Talk Around Town. And a good morning to you, Tom Morfitt.
Good morning, Deborah.
How are you?
I'm fine as frogs here, actually. It's been a big news week.
I'll bet it has, and tell us about some of it.
Okay, well, let's see. In the course of 2 weeks, we've had a mystery ship and a murder suspect.
Mm-hmm.
And that is...
Apprehended.
Apprehended. Actually chased in a foot race. Mm-hmm. So, those stories are the stuff that journalism, newspaper journalism is made of, and radio journalism.
You're obviously on a real high, so tell us about it. It's very late breaking, actually.
Yeah.
Most of it happened yesterday, I think.
Lawmen from the Alaska State Troopers and the Ogden City Police converged in Haines looking for an individual, Stephen Ellwood, who's been living here about a year. Ellenwood. They found him out Small Tracks Road. Living here, a person in our community, and he wouldn't come out of the house. They chased him down. He's on his way back to Utah, where he's suspected of committing a heinous crime, a sexual assault, and a fatal sexual assault and beating of a 92-year-old woman as she was in a retirement home, and he. Mm-hmm. The suspect allegedly came in through the window. This is the kind of crime that,
they really don't want to think about, to tell you the truth.
I think most people consider, most crime is between people who know each other.
Right.
So this was one of those crimes that's like out of the movies. A stranger comes through your window.
I see.
And so this is kind of what we place in our imagination as mm-hmm. the worst thing that could happen to mm-hmm. you. So there was a lot of excitement.
Did I understand that he's down south
calling, from Anchorage calling, who is this guy? And he's a person who lived here for a year and had a pretty standard life. Mm-hmm. Had a girlfriend here, worked some odd jobs around town. We went to get a photo of him last night, and we were tipped off that we had a photo in the paper. He was at our polar bear swim.
Oh, okay.
And Stephen Ellenwood's there, and he's running down the beach, and he has a smile on his face,
mm-hmm.
and jumps in the water. And actually, the picture that ran, he was coming out of the water very happy. And I really wanted to use one of the photos, but he was too far in the distance to really blow it up and have it look like anything. And not so much to say, this is the murderer or the suspected murderer, but to say, you know.
Who knows who's among us?
Right, right. Stephen in that photo was a happy person. He apparently moved here a year ago. Maybe he was going straight. I mean, this alleged murder happened 20 years ago.
Oh, my goodness.
He has had a criminal record since then, as far as we can tell. In Idaho.
Well, and that's how they got the DNA to track him down, is from one of those crimes in Idaho.
In Idaho, okay.
Right. Yeah. So, and it's all by DNA that they did this.
Right. But I think...
that was Margaret Friedenauer, by the way.
Oh, thank you, Margaret.
The voice of Margaret Friedenauer.
How they tracked him down. But I think, you know, we would like to believe that people who are accused of heinous crimes look a certain way and are frowny-faced people that we would never associate with. And there are people like you and me that have happy days and sad days, and I think there's something to learn there.
Is he still? Did I understand he's already out of the community, as far as you know,
Margaret?
But. Yeah, they transport. The Haines police said that they transported him to Lemon Creek in Juneau yesterday after his arrest, and then is awaiting extradition to Utah.
Yeah.
Okay.
And So, and then our other big story, of course, was the mystery boat.
Oh, yeah, which I guess has been solved.
We believe it has been. This was the ship that was discovered by sonar imaging just off, not very far offshore of the Lutac barge ramp, which they call the roll-on, roll-off ramp. Mm-hmm. And apparently was... the barge that was used with another barge during a dredge operation out there in 1976, around 4th of July, they had filled up the dredge barge, which is the barge full of the stuff off the bottom, and had lashed it to the other barge out there, which was one with a crane on it. Mm-hmm. And the wind blew up. One of the barges went down. One of the barges was saved. One of the barges was never seen again. And
until last week.
Maybe it was never seen again because you need sonar to see it. And so we have a story this week talking with the owner of the company.
Well, also, the detective should certainly get credit. Wasn't it Patty Peters that showed up?
Patricia Peters put a piece. It was fascinating putting the story together because everybody had another piece.
Oh.
And, you know, you had to talk to old timers, of course, because I knew. I got here in 86. I knew it hadn't happened since then. So, everybody, it was great. It was one of those great stories that. You know, it was almost like putting together a jigsaw puzzle and having 1,000 pieces spread around the community. And everybody – and we had people – it was just a great story in that, you know, we had people calling up from Juneau and Anchorage. I remember. I checked this registry of sunken ships, and there was a vessel that went down there in World War II with 7 people aboard. And just these crazy –
because they saw the Chilkat Valley News photograph. I see. Your story where you had kind of said, look what we found, but nobody knows what it is.
Right. So it was calling... it was kind of an outline in the sonar image. And,
crazy.
Yeah, people love. I mean,
but Patty Peters actually showed up with a photograph.
Well, Patty has provided a photograph which is not of the sunken ship.
Oh,
it turns out, but the ship that was salvaged.
Okay,
the sunken ship went to the bottom, and nobody ever knew where it was.
Oh, okay.
But there were two ships out there at the time.
They're barges, aren't they?
Barges. Yeah. Okay. Technically, I believe anything. Mm-hmm. Well, maybe it's anything self-propelled over 100 feet a ship.
I read once that the definition of a ship means anything that carries another vessel. So if it like has lifeboats on it, then it's a ship or something.
I thought,
but
it was
a barge is not a ship. It has to carry things.
Well,
anyway,
we have to have a nautical expert call us up on that one. But
yeah.
Maybe Phil Benner. But anyway, so those stories were big, it's kind of things that consume you. They're mysteries, so it's been a big news week. School, in the meantime, the school board approved $6.5 million in spending for the company.
Whoa, and is that more or less than normal?
In general fund spending, it's a little bit less, $300,000 less than last year. Big, you know, reduction anticipated from last year would be, in the course of 2 years, almost 50 students. Now, that projection may not be as severe as projected, but...
yeah, they never do end up being quite as severe.
Well, year, they were as severe.
Oh,
and that
okay.
was, you know, for years, they're very conservative. They said, we're going to lose all these students, and it never turns out. This past year, it actually turned out. And now they're projecting kind of a similar drop this coming year. It remains to be seen. No one could really explain what happened when the new school opened. that we had a little bump, and then we held because people are saying, you know, we were predicting this drop years ago, and it didn't happen until the beginning of this school year. So, and we don't have demographers.
Everyone's savings has run out.
Yeah, we don't have people, you know, statisticians or demographers who, you know, in this town who are trained to say what is happening out there.
Mm-hmm. Well, you're the closest thing we've got, Tom.
Help us.
recording the life of our community.
Yeah, I also want to say the Hooligan are in.
Oh, yeah.
And maybe fittingly enough, it's Earth Day Saturday. That's when we celebrate Earth Day. I believe actually Earth Day maybe it's already happened. But
I don't know. This calendar
I think
that I'm
technically
looking.
Earth Day was in April, but
yeah.
We always
yeah,
wait
it's April
May,
22.
We hold the weather for it. Or we hold until we have the weather
right,
for it.
Right. Yeah, okay, great.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And so,
and of course, the Alaska Marine Highway 50th anniversary big celebration party down here with the golden smokestack.
Yeah, I think demonstrated people love those big old boats. the little sporty fast ferry that runs not in the wintertime. People want a ship. People will come out mm-hmm, to see a ship, mm-hmm. And that baby looks like a ship.
And it was nice. It was a nice celebration. A lot of people came.
And a lot of people told stories.
Oh, nice.
You know, to me, you know, mm-hmm. People actually came up.
They waxed nostalgic?
Well, everybody, I talked to one individual who's in this week's paper, one man, he said, you know, this boat was my lifeline. As a young person, he didn't have much money. And he had a job in Bellingham and Bremerton, Washington, and family up here. And he could get on three ferries. He could walk from his house, get on three ferries, and be up here with $115 total fare, paying $115 total fare. And he said, you know, sometimes he was living on the water and the crackers living on water and crack, you know, what you can get for free in the cafeteria. Mm-hmm. And he said, this was my artery.
Oh,
this kind of made it for me.
Yeah.
And I think that a ship is a beacon and a promise of another place. It's, you know, it's a great symbol. And it also beckons or harkens to the golden age of travel when people mm-hmm. traveled versus they were transported in a little pneumatic tube we call a jet. And you actually got to see the landscape change. You know, that was travel. The romantic notion of travel belongs to a ship and to a train and to a horse. It doesn't belong to these jet airplanes.
Well, Tom.
Thank you.
Yes, that was quite delightful. And I'm not even going to ask if there's any other news after that. Thank you very much, Tom, for stopping by.
There's some other things in the paper as well.
Wax poetic. My goodness. Thank you very much, Tom, for stopping by. We'll check in again with you soon. Chinook Watershed Council was formed as a cooperative agreement between Southeast Conference and Alaska's Department of Fish and Game. Its purpose is to administer funds allocated for sustaining Alaska's salmon. And it's celebrating its 10th year. Wow. Its board of directors is all people that you know. It employs an executive director, an education program director, a science director, and numerous field technicians. Today we're checking in with the executive director of Chinook Watershed Council, Brad Ryan. Welcome, Brad.
Thank you.
So you guys do a lot of different things. Were you aware that it's your 10th anniversary? Your eyebrows kind of went up when I said that.
He did shock me a little bit, yeah.
So happy birthday anyway.
Well, thank you.
You probably need a new decal or something, to celebrate this. Okay, great. So you do a lot of different things, everything from composting to installing culverts and collecting trash and all this. So how does everything really relate back to salmon in your world?
In our world, everything relates back to salmon.
It's a fascinating way of looking at the world, really.
Yeah.
And
yeah,
I suppose
we try
true.
To stay that way. Mm-hmm. Our board actually never lets me forget that. So,
That, and I do want to comment on that because I was checking out your website last night and the list of directors, oh dear, I don't have it right now, but it's quite long. I mean, quite lengthy.
It is.
We have a lot of engaged men, I noticed.
We have a woman now.
Oh, okay.
We do. We maybe haven't updated our website. And we also have a youth representative now.
And who is your youth representative?
Eli White.
Oh, very cool. Okay. Mm-hmm. And the woman?
Sally Anderson,
okay. And let's see, I noticed is Darcy still on there?
Darcy's still on there. And, Randy Bachman, mm-hmm. Norm Hughes.
The president, right?
Yep, Norm is the president. Mm-hmm. Mark Fontenot.
Oh, we've got science.
I'm on the spot here.
No, that's okay. People can go to the Chinook Watershed website. It's very easy to find, actually. So I just wanted to check in with you because I know that you guys are busy all the time, but I know in the summer you're really out and about with a lot of field activities. The most recent one that I'm aware of is the cleanup.
Yep.
Tell me how that went out.
That was last Saturday. It depends on how you look at it. It went great. If you look at how much trash we collected.
Yeah.
We estimated 8 or 10 truckloads. We never really know for sure. There's a lot of drop-off of appliances that go to the recycle center and recycle.
You find appliances in the river?
We haven't found them in the river. We've really switched our efforts. Originally, we thought we'd clean up the river. It turns out the best places to clean up are the drive-up along the river in the mm-hmm. Bald Eagle Preserve area. Mm-hmm. That seems to be a great dumping grounds for refrigerators and stoves and tires and beds and whatnot.
Oh, this is so sad.
It is. And so that's why I say it depends on how it looks at. We got a lot of people that showed up. Over 30, we estimated mm-hmm. 37 mm-hmm. people to mm-hmm. clean up the mm-hmm. river this year or the roadsides. And a lot of truckloads of trash. A lot of the places are the same ones every year the last 3 years. And mm-hmm. so that gets a little frustrating, especially people that have been doing it 3 years come back to me like, how do we stop this? And I'm like,
well, I think the government needs to, we will be addressing that. We're on the committee level, by the way, right now, already addressing
good,
that.
Good. I would love to see that and support
we're
that.
We're
strongly.
Almost there.
Yeah.
We're
and
almost
I think
there.
It's interesting because every year it's not the same people that show up. There's a mm-hmm. core that shows up, but it's good that of the 37 people, some were new, especially the mm-hmm. fifth grade class this year showed mm-hmm. up in force. And so, you know, you got little fifth graders running around saying, this is ridiculous.
Right.
So it's good. Yeah, it went well. And I'm glad we get to do it. Mm-hmm. And it's better than just leaving.
Well, and I thank you for doing it. Okay, what else are you doing this summer? What are some of your educational programs?
Yeah, we have the garden at the school, which you mentioned.
Starvin' Marvin.
We got a second grant that's going to
expand. Now, how do you relate that back to salmon?
Wow. That's a tough call. I think... Boy, back to salmon.
I really didn't mean to put you on the spot. I really thought you were going to just go there.
No, I would love to just go there.
Well, composting.
The program itself is going there in the sense that that's been expanded to local foods. And so we've helped facilitate bring salmon into the school lunch program.
Mm-hmm.
And this year the program is hoping to provide salmon at the farmer's market to help support the local fishermen sales. So when visitors come to town, there'll be an easy place to go on a Saturday and buy mm-hmm. local salmon, mm-hmm. fish, whatever a local fisherman wants to sell. So we're hoping to promote that. It's not a business enterprise for us. Instead, mm-hmm. we're trying mm-hmm. to just...
It's promotional.
Promotional, mm-hmm. you know, support mm-hmm. the local sustainable mm-hmm. Fish.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so educational programs, they're not all for kids, are they?
No, we do. Programs? Living in the Forest, where we bring guest speakers to town or... tap local experts, as mm-hmm. well as we do citizen science classes where they – last year we did a bird observatory where they went out and learned how to band birds.
Oh, that's right.
This year we're doing some point counts to help estimate flyways for birds coming through. What else is there?
I'm curious about – is there an invasive species program that you're starting up?
We're attempting to start an invasive species program. We've actually done some work for DOT where we're going to – provide feedback on what the invasive species are on the sidewalk replacement in front of the school.
On the sidewalk replacement in front of the school.
Yeah, they're replacing the sidewalk on the school side of the state highway.
Oh, okay.
So we did a little survey there and made some recommendations on how they could control the invasive species there. And we're also trying to start a community weed management association, mm-hmm. which allows us then to engage the Cooperative Extension in Juneau and hopefully put up future funds to do surveys of invasive mm-hmm. species. This is especially timely because of the expansion of the highway.
That's where a lot of the invasives are at. And there's also, we're hoping to address invasives along Portage Cove. So, yeah, we're trying to start an invasive program that will...
It's a subject that I became aware of through a class project that just picked a topic. But I didn't really know. I'd never even heard of red canary grass. And now I understand it's growing all over the place. And it actually impacts salmon fry. That's
very badly.
Reed canary grass.
Yeah,
add another E.
There you go. Yeah.
Red canary.
Exactly. Yeah, it's very bad for salmon habitat. Places like Oregon and Washington have spent millions of dollars trying to keep this from impacting their streams to the point where they're just not functional anymore. And so we have a very vested interest in trying to keep control of that if it shows up in force. So,
right.
And knotweed is another one that is high on the list.
Now, how is that in the stream?
It's in the riparian area. It directly impacts the riparian, and it will like close down streams, channelize them, and take away salmon habitat.
And I recognize a knotweed, but that's why I'm really pleased to see that you have a program developing, so at least we can get, you know, people aware of what to look for and be conscious of it. I know my mother loved the jewel weed?
Ornamental jewel
weed. Oh, my
weed.
Goodness, and she planted it up at Chilkat Lake, and now I can't get rid of it, you know?
Yeah.
It's awful.
Yeah, I was going to say, there's a couple of places of that around.
People
that,
plant it.
It's a pretty plant, yeah,
I know.
But it's not very, very good for the native species.
Right, and I do note one alarming scene is the jewel weed along in Portage Cove. It's completely replaced the fireweed. By last summer, I was waxing, you know, this beautiful fireweed down there, because the color is the same as fireweed, but when I got down onto the beach, I realized it wasn't fireweed at all.
True. And one of the things I think we hope to work towards is when contractors are working, if they're just aware that you shouldn't be throwing the horse straw down, you should use something else, and you know, 'cause that might be a vector for bringing in thistle.
Have you brought that to the attention? Because I'm now seeing straw on the construction project.
I know. That just came to my attention. So we're hoping to... maybe talk to some folks about that.
Yeah, soon, before those seeds get.
Very soon.
I just wanted to tap into the relationship now with Skagway, the Taya watershed thing. Is that
right.
Cooperation going well?
It is.
What do you call it, a partnership?
We're their fiscal sponsorship.
I see.
In essence, Skagway's watershed council is very small. The year-round community is small. And so the hope is that by joining forces...
Their watershed's so narrow.
It is narrow. It is narrow and steep.
Yes.
But the hope is that to alleviate some of that administrative cost that we're duplicating back and forth between each other. So, yeah, I just got off the phone with their project coordinator over there, and they have some nice projects going on Poland Creek and... hopefully we can share resources and individuals.
Cool.
You listed quite a staff for Takshinuk, and it's hard to support all of that in one community. So if we could split it up, that would be good.
Well, it's a phenomenal – it seems to me that Takshinuk Watershed Council has been a phenomenal success story, and I really have a lot of admiration for the whole bunch of you from 2003 till now. And so – I just want to say thank you for the work that you do.
All right.
It's
well, thank you.
Yeah. Is there anything else you want to add?
No.
Good.
I appreciate
then
the
we
support.
Have to move on.
All right. Thank you.
Thank you, Brad. You're tuned into Talk Around Town on your local public radio station, KHNS. I'm Deborah Schnabel. Today's talking topic is the Muniplex. And the Muniplex is christened by Chilkat Valley News, actually. Kind of a word to describe the Haines community's planning efforts that have been undergoing several different names on its way to becoming a facilities master plan. This process may have started with a desire for a single community facility of some sort, and it's currently engaged in ascertaining the efficiencies, the usefulness, the condition, and the needs of some of our public facilities. Its end goal of the planning process is to develop a capital improvement plan for how to meet the community's need for public facilities. We have two members of the Facilities Master Plan Steering Committee with us today, Lenise Henderson-Fontenot. Hello, Lenise.
Hello, good morning.
And Rob Goldberg. Welcome. Hi. My first question is to clarify kind of the name of the process that we've been involved in. I mean, it started out a couple of years ago. My best recollection is it kind of started with this identified need for a community center. And that's kind of where we started. And then there's now we have a Facilities Master Plan Steering Committee. But also the name Haynes 2015. So how are these things all related? Is Haynes 2015 just kind of a code name for the process, or is it something separate from this, Lenise?
Yeah, no, I think Haynes 2015 is just the marketing name because everything else is so long.
Because you're
so
a marketer.
Yeah, that we just needed an easy handle. And in talking with Mark Ernest, the borough manager, that seemed like a good time, 2015, to be thinking about breaking ground. Mm-hmm. And so that it just came up as a shortened marketing name for all of these different
planning processes.
Right.
Okay. So it was a year ago that the borough put out an RFP, that's a request for proposals, for a community facility improvement project. That was kind of the official name of the RFP. And an architectural firm, McCool Carlson Green, was responsive, and they proposed a phased project. Phase one was supposed to document existing conditions and needs for facilities in the community. And then phase two would be a community-wide visioning process to build on the preliminary assessments. And, Lenise, you, as a professional development company, conducted a needs assessment last fall as part of the assessment. So, Rob, where are we in the process? Are we still in phase one? Are we in between one and two? Are we in phase two?
We've been gathering information. That's where we are now. We have had the architects from McCool, Carlson, and Green come down from Anchorage. They poked around all of our borough buildings and looked at things and made an assessment and wrote a report, which I have here in my hands.
And I want to interrupt you. I promised you I would read it, and I did not.
Okay, that's okay. All right. I can tell you about what's in it.
I'm going to ask you what's in it. So, but I do want to clarify first, that it's the Human Resources Building, the Chilcat Center, the pool, the Borough Administrative Offices, the Public Safety Building, and the museum.
And the Visitor Center.
And the Visitor Center. Okay. Just wanted to clarify. Those are the facilities that are part of this.
Right. They didn't look at the newer buildings that we have, just the older ones that that need work.
But it also doesn't have the utilities. It doesn't have the water sewer treatment plant, nor are we looking at the sewer facility. Okay.
Right. And so they've come up with a report, and they've listed the things that they think are good about the buildings and the things they think are deficient. And there are also lots of numbers in there about energy usage and potential savings if we were to make the buildings more energy efficient or replace them with more energy efficient buildings.
Mm-hmm. So I know that I did attend a meeting recently when the report, what is the name of the report that came out? It's like the facilities assessment report.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. And it's like, and this can be found on the borough's website. If you, I don't remember exactly where it is, but I know you can find the report of each of these facilities.
I think so.
Yeah. So what either one of you can speak to it. I know, Lenise, you said at the meeting that you had actually crawled around with, was it Mr. Gamache, is the architect that did the review, I guess, the on-site surveys. So did you guys go with him to inspect these buildings and see for yourself what was like in the deep, dark underbelly of some of these buildings?
Well, I worked as his guide during the time that he was here as far as taking him to a building, letting him know which building it was, kind of giving him an overview, and then I would walk him through portions of the building, and then he would also disappear for periods of time to go underneath or behind or whatever it is that he wanted to do. And But I just took him basically from building to building to building.
Okay, so you weren't part of the inspection team. What does the report say about, let's just pick one of the buildings.
Okay, well, the building that really rose to the top or sunk to the bottom, as it were, is the public safety building. And this came out, too, in the survey that Lanise did, that people thought rightly that that's a very important building in town. And in addition to the architect's report on that building, we also now have an engineer's report. We had PND Engineering from Juneau come up and do a structural assessment on the building. And what they found out is not very encouraging.
Oh.
I have that report here, too, and it basically says that the public safety building has what's known in the building trades as sick building syndrome. It has water infiltration problems that are causing the building to rot from the ground up. And the engineering report has some pretty graphic pictures of rotten joists and rotten supporting beams under the building and standing water in the crawl space. It also has moisture escaping through the insulation and condensing on the inside of the siding, which is really not a good sign. And so that building is in serious need of repair before it reaches a crisis point of literally falling down.
Let me just get some clarification, because the engineering report then followed another report which had been somewhat more positive about that building. I remember specifically something that the roof is in very good shape. Is that correct?
The roof is okay, but the foundation is not.
Okay. And so the engineering report peeled off another skin or whatever.
Yeah, so this committee that is formed, our task is to do research. And, you know, not being architects or engineers, we're hiring those folks to go out and really look at our buildings and give us an honest assessment so that we have the information we need to make a good decision going forward. And the decisions now with the public safety building are, do we want to put a lot of money into it to fix the water and rot problems that it has? Or do we want to look at buying a different building? There's one available.
That has potential,
it's John Floreski's building that could possibly be a new fire hall, has four big equipment bays and some office space. Or do we want to look at building a brand new energy-efficient building to replace the one we have now? So it's a little bit like, as a community, we're like a family facing the decision of having to deal with a very old car. The building we have now is, it's like a 1970s car. It was built at a time when people didn't really care that your vehicle only got 8 miles to the gallon. And we've been using this old building, and, you know, if it were a car, it would be all rusted out. It would need all sorts of mechanical problems or mechanical work to fix it up. And the next choice would be, well, maybe we should buy a used vehicle and put some money into that, and maybe that will be adequate for our needs. Or do we want to look at buying a brand new, very energy efficient hybrid vehicle that would get great mileage? So it's something akin to that is what we're facing as a community.
Okay. And I know that also functionally, I suppose, that what we call the public safety building has inadequate, I mean, it doesn't have a morgue, which some people have identified that we probably need to have a morgue in our community.
There are a lot of deficiencies
in the
jail.
Building.
Yeah, the jail is apparently not up to code. The whole
I was in it the other day.
There's a whole story.
I kept hearing that the jail cells were terrible, and of course I had a vision in my mind, you know, of old movies, you know, these horrible jail cells. Anyway, I'm not going to say they're bright and airy, but I mean, I can see, like you say, mostly, you know, it's 70s construction. I mean, that's really what you're looking at, and just remind myself that is 35 years ago. Right? In the 70s?
Yeah,
Pretty much 40 years ago. So, yeah, the jails, you can see that it's not what it's supposed to be. You know, you can just, I think, you know, we all sort of become more aware in some kind of indirect way of what a good building looks like.
The equipment bays at the time were designed for smaller trucks. We have bigger trucks now that barely fit in there. And there are a lot of deficiencies with the building. They're all detailed here in the engineers and architects report.
Right. Well, like I say, one of the things about that particular building that I find really intriguing is it was a modular.
Right.
And so when we started talking about rehabilitating the building, I wondered how you would do that with a modular building. You know, you don't really have the structural design, you know, that a frame building.
The engineer talks about that. He says it would take about $500,000 to just to address the water and rot issues in the building. And he talks about getting venting into the crawl space and finding out where the water's coming in and draining to try to get the water away from the building. And then it would involve taking all of the T111 siding off, re-insulating the building, and putting a vapor barrier and putting new siding back on.
Right, and then you have a building that's still interior-wise.
Still have the old building, right.
1970s with little steep stairways and all the rest of that stuff. So, okay, we'll come back to the analysis of the whole big package, but what's the next one? The building, the public safety building rose to the top.
Yeah, so...
Was anything else after that?
Well, the other thing we're looking into is to look at potential energy efficiency by combining uses into one building. We have lots of buildings that the borough owns that are spread out. For instance, the public administration building, the borough offices. If we were to combine the administration building into a new fire and police building, how much would that save in energy costs?
Right, I understand that question, but you could combine that with anything. You know, I mean, so my question, though, is what did the administration building rise as in McCool's report as a building that had great deficiencies?
It's in pretty good shape.
Yeah.
It's not bad. It could be repurposed for a different use. The building that turned out to be very energy inefficient is the visitor center.
It's
one of the smaller borough buildings. It's only about 1,000 square feet, which is like a small home. And yet, for some reason, it takes about $1,000 a month to heat it. Uses about $12,000 of oil to heat the building, which if that were your home, you would be...
Move out.
You'd move out, or you'd be applying for the energy
grants
to try to make it better.
Right.
So that's one that really stood out, too. It's like, wow, why is this little building using so much energy?
And we don't have an answer to that? I mean, it's a log building, which, I mean, that's why.
Yeah.
Yeah, and it has little cracks.
Right.
Okay.
Yeah. So we have a lot of... A lot of our buildings are deficient in one way
or
another.
I'm curious about the museum. And
The museum, I can look at it here. The museum came up pretty good.
Okay, because I had heard that there were water problems underground, the water flow issues may be impacting
the
foundation.
Yeah, it would take me a minute
foundation.
To find the museum here in this big report.
Okay, but, because the thing is that at the meeting, and we'll get to what I read in the Chilkat Valley News, in the newspaper, was that, the committee has made a recommendation that McCool and Associates now provide an RF, a quote, I guess, for design on a building that pulled together the public safety with the visitor center and the admin. And I'm kind of curious what process you went through to put those functions together.
Yeah, well, we're looking at energy efficiency. And there are some people who have a problem with putting the visitor center in there. So I don't know if that's going to go forward with that idea. But Jason Gamache, the architect, did just send us a conceptual design, just a floor plan, just to see how everything might fit into one building. And he has the fire and the police and the borough administrative offices and on one corner a visitor center. And, just to see how many square feet that might take to do that. No elevations or anything like that, just a conceptual drawing. And so, again, we're doing research and we want to find out, okay, if we are looking into the option of buying a new energy efficient building, how many square feet would it be and how much will it cost?
So, Lenise, I'd like to talk with you, and I hope that's all refreshed in your mind, the results of the survey that you did.
I actually brought it with me.
Excellent.
In case we have any questions.
Excellent. Yeah, because I can certainly appreciate the concept of looking at the energy efficiencies and that sort of thing. And it's going to be a tough community issue in a way to resolve what functions are best combined for for their functionality. You know, as they say, people, and I'm one of them, I admit it, when I think of having a visitor center in a building with, you know, emergency vehicles, you know, coming in and out or nearby or around or something like that, it'd probably be exciting for all the guests that were at the visitor center, but it's not necessarily safe. Or it's not necessarily, you know, the face of the community that, you know, you necessarily want to put out there. So the question is, in the survey, people kind of ranked what they saw as important in the community. Where does the visitor facilities, you know, rank with the people's, measurements of what's important to them, and right. The museum too, because I guess for me, kind of museums and visitor centers kind of go together more than, you know, visitor centers with public safety. So how do you guys play around with that while you're talking about these things?
Well, I think first of all, in what we've been talking about, I think it's important to note that 95% of the people surveyed agreed that energy costs and efficiency should be a top priority.
Okay.
So I think that you know, that's a huge number. And so the committee is sort of heading in the right direction by taking that into consideration when they're looking at these buildings. There seems like there's a lot of agreement on that. In ranking the importance of buildings, interestingly enough, the visitor center ranked last. It ranked number 11. But I think the reason that is because
we're
normally
not visitors.
local people don't go into the visitor center unless they've got family from out of town or they've got people who are coming in. I mean, as a local person, we just don't go into the visitor center very often. So I'm not sure that's a good measurement of where it should be in our priorities. But I think that overall, the museum ranked right up above it, ranked number 10. But again, the museum isn't something that, as a local, that you're going to, you know, maybe more than a few times a year or whatever, depending on whether you've got some kind of program or, you know, something going on there.
Right.
So I'm not really sure that those are real good measurements for trying to think about where those should be in this new scheme.
Okay.
But energy efficiency was seen as extremely important, and I think the fact that the visitor center is so inefficient makes it a good thing to look at.
Mm-hmm. Do you remember the energy efficiency of the museum? Is that in the report? I mean, is that something that...
Yeah,
you said it ranked.
Yeah, it's in here. I can look it up if you like.
I'm just curious about
that.
The
museum ranked higher as far as the structure and energy efficiency than a lot of our other buildings. It was in better shape than most of them.
Huh, okay. Yeah. And the administration building, what's
same.
The report on that?
Yeah, it's in, you know, I think it said fair or satisfactory condition. Mm-hmm. Wasn't listed as poor. Mm-hmm. Like some of the others.
Mm-hmm. Though it does have a leaky roof, I think.
Oh.
It used to be right over the copy machine, but I think we moved that.
Yeah. So. The bigger issue here, I mean, talking about, you know, whether to include the visitor center or not into this concept for a new building is sort of a minor issue. The main question is, do we want to try to rehabilitate the building we have now, the public safety building, look at buying a different building, like
one that's already
Floreski's building, or look into building a new building. That's the main question. What's going to go into it is that's the next step down the road.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
You mean what the functions will be of a new building?
Yeah,
So in other words, when you're talking, then you're not just saying replace the functions that are currently in the public safety building.
That's one option.
to just simply do that. Cause
right.
I mean, that's an option,
one option
too, to
would,
just simply
would
do
be,
that.
For instance, if we were to look into purchasing John Floreski's building, I think it would be to replicate what we have now, which would be a fire and police building and, you know, ambulance, right. And I don't even know if the assembly chambers would be included in that, too. We might have to look for a different spot.
Well, and that's one of the interesting things that occurs to me, that there's nothing that requires us to have the assembly chambers with the public safety
building.
That's
right.
It's just that if we have a public safety building that is specifically a public safety building, mm-hmm. then we got to find another home for the chambers.
That's right.
And the chambers then, of course, probably more rationally or logically go with the government offices.
Right. And there are also offices in our public safety building. The public facilities department is in there, too. So one of the things we're thinking about is that it could make our borough government operate more efficiently to have all of the borough offices and functions mm-hmm. in one building, so mm-hmm. people can actually just go and talk to each other.
Mm-hmm. And I think that's what makes this such a layered question, is because there's lots of ways to look at it. Mm-hmm. You can look at just trying to keep doing what you're doing and not change anything and you know, remodel old buildings. Or you can look at strategies for making our government more efficient. Mm-hmm. There's a whole economic development possibility that mm-hmm. plays into here. There's a lot of questions that have to be answered that will all go into a final decision. And that's why this phase, I think, is so important. We have to gather all the research. We have to look at all the possibilities. And then when we start to get to the point of making a decision, all of these other factors come in,
right.
and that's what makes it difficult.
Yeah, and one of those factors is, and was discussed briefly at the meeting the other day too, was the voids that you create if you consolidate. And while we have a downtown revitalization committee ongoing, you know, trying to revitalize the downtown, while we also have the idea of consolidating activities into one place, I'm not saying they're opposed to each other, but it's a dynamic that you kind of set up. Because right now, we do have facilities that are kind of close to the Main Street area, which we mostly think of as downtown. And if we move things away from, you know, Third Avenue and where the administration building is right now and put them somewhere else, you know, closer to the highway, even a block away, it really changes the traffic patterns, and it changes the energy, the vitality of the commercial area too. So, I mean, those are all issues that, like you say, come into it at some point. So there are other communities that have experienced this problem. Are you familiar at all with Cordova and
yes.
where they are there?
Mm-hmm.
So tell me about where they are in their project and what they did.
Yeah, Cordova is undertaking a really big project right now. They are building a huge building that steps down the hillside there that has it's going to have their administrative offices, it's going to have their library and their museum and an auditorium like mm-hmm. we have here at the Chilkat mm-hmm. Center. So it's a big building with lots of different functions.
But it is interesting to me. I'm trying to figure out what is it that sort of doesn't settle right with me in a way. To me, I guess I do make a distinction between public safety kind of as vehicles and you know, a lot of activity that's active, a lot of action stuff, mm-hmm. as opposed to museums and administrative building offices and those things like the Cordova building. It doesn't have the public safety issues
right.
in it, but it does have the museum. I don't know if they even have a visitor center in Cordova. Probably the museum would be one.
Yeah, the design it's not even a design, but the conceptual drawing that Jason sent us recently has the police and fire on one end of the building and the administrative part on the other.
With a borough assembly room for the assembly, like a public meeting area?
Yes,
in
I
it?
Think there is
uh-huh,
a
was,
public
yeah.
meeting
yeah.
room in there, too.
Yeah,
it's one of the functions.
Mm-hmm. Well, I know one of... I'll just tell you a little story that I thought was pretty interesting. You know, a couple of weeks ago, the assembly had this big vote on whether or not we were going to, like, include chairs, you know, for right. our borough assembly. It was like $2,300 in the budget, yeah. right? And so it comes to a tie vote, which Stephanie has mm-hmm. to break, you know, by saying, no, we're not going to have any chairs. Then we all go to Skagway, you know, for this little summit on the ferry. Mm-hmm. And, oh, my goodness, we walk into this absolutely glorious Skagway chambers, and you just, you know, they have a dais up there, and everybody sits with all the microphones are wired in, and everything is beautiful. And suddenly, you know, it's like, what are we doing? Like, we're just thinking poverty, you know, by yeah. not even buying chairs.
Did you put the chairs back in the budget?
No, we haven't. I mean, that's a little specific to get down to actually whether you're going to buy it. I think really I have my thoughts on why the assembly did that. But anyway, it's so interesting how you get, how you present yourself and your activities and what you think about what you're doing with the building and the facility that you're in.
Well, again,
and,
we're working in a 1970s building, so and the rest of the world has moved on.
And, you know, I think that is such an important point, Deborah, because I think that we can be inspired by the spaces that we work in,
mm-hmm.
and it can make a really big difference in people's attitude and their motivation and their energy levels. Mm-hmm. And so as we think about what we want our community to be like,
uh-huh.
I think our public buildings can have a big impact on that.
Mm-hmm. I think you're absolutely right. You know, the visitation to the Skagway, have you been there before?
Nope.
It's beautiful. It's all gorgeous wood, and you were there, Margaret. Were you inspired? It must have been very inspirational to you.
It was comfortable. They have free coffee.
Well, that's a whole nother line item in the budget. Let's not go there.
But were the chairs comfortable?
Well, certainly the assembly member chairs were comfortable. And it was just it was beautiful, brightly lit. It postured. People got postured or positioned in such a way that you just immediately had a respect almost, you know, for the business at hand.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you weren't just slopping around, you know, with cords like strung all over the place and no place to put your book and no place for people to stand and talk. And you know how in Haines it's like, well, come on up to the front of the room, you know, mm-hmm. and tell us who you are. And it is uncomfortable for people,
mm-hmm.
as opposed to having a room where you can actually have a you know, a place for people to come and address the assembly in
right.
a proper manner. Okay. One of the things that the funding issue, when we get to that, I mean, as I understand it right now, we're kind of in between. Are we still in kind of phase one in
a
way?
We are gathering information.
Okay. Yeah. that sounds like a very studied response, Rob. Because the phase two, I read this last night from the McCool's proposal. Phase two was an expanded community-wide visioning process to build on the preliminary needs assessment. Is there going to be a time and a place when there is a community visioning session, or is this what the Public Facilities Committee is going to be doing on its own? Or will the public be invited somewhere?
Oh, absolutely.
Somewhere?
Yeah, we want community input. And when it gets to the point, if we decide that we want to build a new building and we can afford to build a new building, then there'll be a lot of community input. You know,
okay.
we've already had some that, you know, there was a thought of, well, maybe we could increase energy efficiency by including a visitor center into this concept drawing. And some people already have said, no, you know, we don't want the visitor center in there. And so it's that sort of input that will happen along the way.
Well, hopefully they can say they just don't think it's a good idea, not just say no.
Well, we've had some no's already. So.
Well, okay.
Yeah.
Okay, so then let's move on then to just briefly, we have just a few minutes left. I know that the mayor was very supportive of this, you know, Muniplex, and basically said, well, she didn't quite say the funding is no problem, but, you know, there's a lot of opportunity to get creative with how we could fund a public building after we decide how much we can afford.
Yeah, and I'm just thinking about two projects that we've done recently. We built a new library and then we built a new school. And it starts with a vision.
Mm-hmm.
And it's great to try to get what you want. You know, envision something really good, try to get it, see if the funding's available. If the funding's available, maybe we can get what we want. And if it isn't, then we might have to try something else.
Okay. Thanks very much, Rob. Thanks, Lanise. That's it for today. And I appreciate the work that you do and moving this project along. I don't know if we'll make it by 2015, but yeah, maybe so. Thanks for joining us today. And now for everybody's favorite part of the program. Hey, who are you?
My name is Christy Fowler, and I'm going to tell you about myself. My maiden name is Tangs, and I've lived my life in Haines.
Ooh.
I came to Lynn Canal through my mother's birth canal. I was born in the year of the sheep. Growing up, we didn't have TV, so we created our own entertainment. My dad, Marty Tangs, owned the Pioneer Bar. He'd bring his drunk friends home from the bar, and my brother Tony and I were like minstrels. Tony and I would sing songs and dance for them while they threw coins at our feet. Tony and I wrote poetry and songs from as far back as I can remember. My dad, Marty, was a brilliant man, but a hardcore alcoholic. When Tony was 10, he got juvenile rheumatoid arthritis and lost the use of his legs for a couple of years. I think writing helped both of us during this time. When I was in fourth grade, I sang a song I wrote on TV in Juneau.
Really?
Yes. And
are you going to sing it for us now?
Last year I had a boyfriend, first day roses he did send, second day he sent a ring, third day he sent everything. What a time to leave. Anyway, I wrote that in fourth grade, and I remember twirling around and getting tangled up in a microphone cord on TV. every fourth night of every summer, I was a pre-show entertainment for the melodrama The Smell of the Yukon.
Yes, you were.
And you might remember I sang Hello, Dolly.
Mm-hmm.
And I did that until I was a preteen, and I rebelled, and I threw my straw hat across the room and ripped off my pinafore and my bloomers. When I was a teenager...
Not going to take that anymore.
No. When I was a teenager, I played piano for the choir in school. A high point of my life is that I spent my junior year of high school in Switzerland, and I was on a ski team, believe it or not. I was in Montreux, Switzerland, watching a Zappa concert when the place got on fire and burnt to the ground.
Wow.
That was the inspiration for the Deep Purple song Smoke on the Water, and I was there. And I found out later that Bart Henderson was there, too.
Wow.
When I was 17, I was Miss Alaska Teenager.
I remember that.
And I went to Atlanta, Georgia, and met Jimmy Carter before he became president.
Before? You knew him before he was president. Wow.
Yeah. And I also won a national essay contest that year, which I'm very proud of. I graduated from Haines High School, and I spent 8 years trying to get my bachelor's degree. I studied fashion design.
That was tough.
Yes. I studied fashion design in L.A. At one point, I was offered a job designing Barbie doll clothes for Mattel.
How long did that last?
Well, I was offered the job, and I turned it down, believe it or not.
Uh-huh. Uh-huh.
I went to commercial art school in Seattle, and I studied liberal arts at Willamette University in Salem, and in between, I'd come home and bartend for my dad. But I kind of got hung up along the way and started partying a lot and kind of got lost.
Oh, dear.
Yeah. Only thing that helped me was I kept writing songs. Okay. That was like therapy. Always has been. So I picked myself up and I went to Berklee College of Music in Boston. And I worked my way through school and got my degree in music. And Quincy Jones handed me my diploma.
Cool.
Yep.
Cool.
Then I bartended some more.
Okay. Yeah.
Saved enough money to record my songs. I went to Nashville. While I was there, I got a call from CBS Publishing asking me to stay there and write for them. But I also got a call from my dad.
Ooh, those are tough, those calls from dad.
Asking me to come home and...
handle the business.
Yep. And so I was insecure and I came home. I've been here ever since, but I wouldn't trade it for the world because this is where I met my husband. I've had wonderful time with my parents. We have two incredible sons, Chevy Fowler, who turned 17 today, and Marty, who is 13. And my mother, Helen Tangs, lives with us above the business. We own the Pioneer Bar and Bamboo Room, which has been in our family for 60 years this year.
Whoa.
And my mom is in the same bedroom she was in when I was a kid. She can still do the can-can.
All right.
So I really appreciate where we are. I appreciate the inspiration from our surroundings. I appreciate having great friends like you, who I've known my whole life.
My whole life.
And Haynes, if I was a millionaire, I'd still live in Haynes. I love Haynes.
Oh, my goodness. Well, Chrissy, that's a wonderful thing. Thank you.
And the Bamboo Room is famous for halibut fish and chips. It was named in the top 25 seafood dives in the nation. We're proud of our dive status. Pioneer was named in the top 33 ski town bars in North America. We have a great staff. They're like family. But I am not a bar owner. I am a songwriter.
Yes, you are. Thank you. And a singer.
Well, not exactly. But anyway.
And how is that going?
Well, I have a new passion. For the last few years when I was doing the till, I would
have to wrap it up.
I would watch the Dr. Phil show, and I decided his quotes would make great hooks for songs. Mm-hmm. And I've written 20 songs based on his sayings with my intention of getting them to Dr. Phil. So that's who I am and what I do.
Oh, thank you, Chrissy. Hey, who are you with Chrissy Tangs? Thanks very much for joining us today, Chrissy. And that's it for Talk Around Town this week. Thanks to our guests, Tom Morfitt, Rob Goldberg, Lanise Henderson, Brad Ryan, and Chrissy Tangs Fowler. Next edition of Talk Around Town will be right here on this radio station, KHNS, on May 23rd. I'm Deborah Schnabel. Thanks for staying with me this hour. Stay tuned to KHNS, 102.3 FM, Haynes.